This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Hey there, freaks. Welcome to podcast number 2 of Wednesday, November 28th, 2018, the year of our Lord. This Satoshi. Edition of Tales from the Crypt is a rabbit hole recap, and this episode is brought to you by Baboon. Baboon makes tactical duffel bags for all our life's adventures. I'm going on an adventure in a couple weeks to Paris, and I plan on bringing my Baboon bag. That is because their bags use waterproof materials, are tear-proof, and last forever. Every bag comes with a free shipping and lifetime guarantee. Baboon duffels are called go bags. They come in two sizes. You can get a small go or a large go. Small is a carry-on. You don't want to check your bags. You want to pay for that. You get the small. Hey, you're looking to spend a little bit more on your flight, check some bags. Get the big bag, large bag, excuse me, the large go bag. You can carry them wherever. Both sizes fit, stuffed in a trunk, carried in your back, or dragged wherever your adventure takes you. These bags will never break, period. There's a lifetime guarantee. And what do we say about lifetime guarantees, Matt?
They're fucking dope.
They're dope. See why Condé Nast Traveler is calling it the ultimate weekender. Visit baboontothemoon.com and enter the code CRYPT, that's CRYPT, for 10% off your purchase. baboontothemoon.com, code word CRYPT, 10% off. You freaks out there. We just recorded an interview series with our guest who's in the house for the Rabbit Hole Recap as well. I want to introduce you to Dan Held.
I've stuck around here. They won't kick me out.
We won't kick him out. We've lured him in.
I walked in with whiskey, and you couldn't walk away.
We polished off some beers.
True story, yes.
Matt brought in the whiskey. I'm on one right now, Matt. A lot has happened this week. I haven't even looked at the schedule of topics, but what we were just talking about, and I think it would be a good first topic, is the announcement of OPAC. O-P-A-C?
OPAC?
OPAC. There we go. OPAC. I was thinking of Tupac. They announced that they sanctioned two Iranians in their Bitcoin addresses. They're now on a blacklist, I guess. So the OPAC is trying to sanction these two Bitcoin addresses they know are owned by Iranians. And these Iranians have been using these two particular addresses for more than 5 years. What do we think about this?
And it's connected to ransomware. Right.
I think
they were like,
that's an important.
It was the payout addresses for ransomware.
Important detail.
So they kept getting reused. They reused them for the last 5 years, which is like horrible, horrible.
Learn how to use your Xpub keys.
Yeah.
To Iranian hackers.
Horrible OPSEC. So ransomware is the viruses that they encrypt your computer, and then to get your files back, you have to pay them Bitcoin. And they got very popular over the last 2-3 years.
Heartbleed and what was the other one?
No, Heartbleed is not ransomware.
Heartbleed was
the SSL issue that the Bitcoin core devs discovered.
That was it. It was something locker then.
Yeah, do you know what it's called?
Not the Hurt Locker. That's a movie.
It was a good movie though.
All right.
Yeah, it was.
It existed. It attacked the hospitals across Europe last year.
Yeah, they attacked a lot. I mean, I don't know if these particular guys, did or not. I mean, the question is enforceability, right? Is can they actually enforce this? Can they pressure known miners into not mining transactions that leave that address? Can they pressure exchanges into not exchanging it for other funds and destroying the blockchain analysis? BTCE, when they got taken down, because of ransomware. Part of the reason was the ransomware investigation that they were allowing people to transfer their ransomware funds into BTCE to get either cash out or altcoins.
And didn't they prove that some of the Mt. Gox coins were being laundered through BTCE as well?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
For the listeners of the show, BTCE is this wonderfully charming Russian exchange or Eastern European exchange where when you log in, all that's required is an email address or when you create an account. And if you go to the FAQ section, it's quasi Cyrillic in English. So it's his way. It's his support was all Russian. They invented the troll box. So I wanted to interject and include some old history here just to make sure everyone knows. The good old days. The troll box was an infinite source of wisdom and good technical analysis.
The troll box was a place where it was a very innovative place where users would route around variables set upon the exchange, most of which being around the word pump. And
there's still a troll box left in BitMEX. BitMEX has the last.
Yeah.
Troll box standing.
These exchanges would try to censor the troll box, keeping out certain words that would either try to persuade people to pump or dump
BTC.
The price.
Not BTC. BTC didn't censor their troll box.
There's no rules there.
There's no rules. And that's why they got shut down eventually.
And then they supposedly reopened as Wex, but it looks like that might have been a honeypot or just criminals.
No, that was a... I have an individual that I'm not going to name who had his funds at BTCE. He was a newbie. I told him not to keep his money there, but he did. So they did the Bitfinex model where they had like a token that represented the debt or essentially the amount of money that there was seized. Mm-hmm. But all the crypto there was preserved, all of it. It was only the fiat that was seized.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was a honeypot or not. Like, I don't know if it was used, but I don't believe you had to use new identification. You just use your old identification to log in.
I'm pretty sure everyone didn't get paid though. Did your buddy got paid out?
So you got like 70% of your money back, and then the 30% was represented in those forms of tokens or debt tokens that like Bitfinex did back in the day too.
But he actually withdrew?
Yep.
That's great to hear.
Hey, there's some ethical scammers out there.
I mean, no, I thought BTC was a good actor in the space. You know, they were always a good exchange.
Well, all right, we're getting off the beaten path here. What is going on with OPEC and these two Iranians?
That's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the first big shot across the bow from like I say shot across the bow way too much on this podcast. Noted. But the authorities are saying, hey, we're gonna try at least to regulate and point out certain addresses and say, hey,
this is an obvious case because they fucking reuse the same address for 5 years and it has a ton of fucking Bitcoin in it, right? Like, of course you're going to publish that address and be like, this is a bad address.
Bad OPSEC.
Again. But, like, they can cover their tracks, like, you know, relatively
well,
easily.
Yeah, so let's jump into this. What if they sent... So here's a slippery slope. We begin with OPEC coming out and basically coming after these two... wallets in particular. All right, so they spin up an Electrum, they create a new address, they send it to that address. What happens then?
Well, probably all the regulated exchanges will still consider that. Even if you send it to a new address, they'll probably consider
it. But what if, let's say some person out there is buying OTC from these two guys, have no idea that their addresses are sanctioned. And, well, even if it is published, there could be a useful idiot out there that they could dump it off on.
To hop in a little bit, exchanges will still accept coins that are from an address that has been quote-unquote tainted if it's been more than a few hops. The two-hop methodology is, I think, very typical for a lot of the exchanges. Now, I get the absurdity of it. I agree. But what I'm trying to say is that...
With this one, with these wallets, you think if they did like five hops, they'd still...
Yeah, I think like six hops is typically like in the traditional financial world, it's fine, which is silly because you can just bounce it off of six different addresses.
In the same wallet.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't really mean anything. And this kind of highlights the weird intersection of the traditional world with the crypto one. But yeah, I think like these coins aren't permanently tainted forever. Like there's no way that the U.S. government would taint bills for forever. Fungibility for the existing financial system is important too. I don't think they're trying to like really like taint these forever.
And
I just don't see that.
And this is actually a very interesting topic to me in particular. This summer when I was at a conference in your hometown, Dan, in Dallas, I asked Tor Demeester, because this was something that bothered me for a while. The fungibility question, like, is one Bitcoin equal to one Bitcoin? Are there Bitcoin UTXOs that are superior to other UTXOs due to taint? And Tor made a perfect point, like, no, not in a global currency where, yes, the US may sanction these addresses, but another country will be like, hey, we don't have...
How about like Satoshi's coins?
What do you mean?
Do you think those are worth more or less?
I think they're worth equal.
I think they'd be worth more because if you move them, you could tank the market.
All right, this is a rabbit hole I was not ready to jump down. I don't know about Satoshi. I'm talking about, all right,
One Bitcoin is worth different.
No, because I agree with Tor's argument. Like, no matter what, somebody's going to be able to buy them at market price. And, like, if you're willing to buy, why would you buy Satoshi's coins at a higher price knowing that them moving would crash the market?
Okay,
like, so doesn't make any sense to me.
Let me hop in here. I think I have a good perspective on this. So, do vanity coins trade at a higher rate than non-vanity coins, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what we're kind of asking here, I think?
Yes.
I mean, I don't see, like, it's not like I have Roger coins, and let's say I'm a fan of Roger. Now I've got Roger coins, which I'm, I have a long history with Roger, but those might trade at a discount. But yeah, that's a great example. Is there any premium or discount for any type of coin in crypto, or especially in Bitcoin? And I don't think there is no market for tainted coins. If there was, you know, I certainly see people in other countries take full advantage of that spread mm-hmm. and buy as much as they could. And we don't see a secondary market for, quote, you know, the tainted coins.
Yeah.
Well, because we haven't really seen any kind of real enforcement yet, I would say.
Well, no. But I would argue the point that Tor is making is that you're not going to be able to mandate these restrictions. Like, it's impossible in
right, because
world.
What Dan just said, you have, like, regulatory arbitrage. Yeah, you would just have a spread go across borders when you have a global currency.
Yeah.
And on a positive note, let's say we really like those coins. It's a Roger. It's Tur's coins. Mm-hmm. I love Tur. Tur's a great guy. He's the first, like, Bitcoin economist in the space. I shared his piece around how, like, investment managers should think about Bitcoin back in 2015. I shared that with that was the first article I shared with my dad. So Tur is really great. So I want to buy Tur's coins because I like Tur. We don't see a premium for anyone's coins or Vitalik's coins. We don't see a premium for those either. Mm-hmm.
Vitalik can't sell his coins because if he tries to move them, the market tanks.
I already sold most of them too.
I mean, we know his exposed wallets. I mean, we've witnessed him watch hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, he still owns it. We're not worried about it. I'm not worried.
Someone just posted an article and they cited me because I was just doxing his wallets on Twitter. So they quoted me.
It's a terrible practice, Matthew. We do not condone doxing.
You should not allow them to be visible. Like, if they're visible, I'm going to post them on Twitter.
I know.
So let's run through it.
Well, I will say I agree with Dan. I don't think I think one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. I don't think you can have tainted coins in the long run because at the end of the day, there'll always be somebody like, "Hey, send it to me." Like,
but there could be a spread where in the U.S., for instance, certain Bitcoins, you know, need to be. I don't know. Like, let's pretend we're these guys, right? And you want to get, you're on the OPAC list, and you realize, "Fuck, I shouldn't have hard coded these addresses. Let's, you know, clean up our act." Like, all they have to do is you know, either go through a mixer or, even better, you know, you go to, like, BISC or something like that or Binance and you convert into Monero, you convert back, and then you have there's no blockchain analytics there. And then you have completely, I mean, there's some blockchain analytics, but then you have completely
obscure.
Or, like, plausible deniability, right? Yes. You have enough plausible deniability that you can...
Yes, so these attempts to mandate these restrictions may be in vain. I would bet that they will be in vain, which is funny. OPAC's going to have egg on his face.
And Niraj, if you're listening to this, he's at Coin Center. Niraj, if you're listening to this, we would love to maybe help with the commentary around this. To where if this is an issue that you're working towards, we can help you craft that narrative.
Niraj, we're here.
Well, I mean, if the U.S. government really wants to shut this stuff down, like, they should really shut down Zcash because it's being used to launder all this money through the system. And it's based in the U.S., so it's got, you know, big corporate pockets to hit.
It's backed by J.P. Morgan and Amazon, though, you know. Do you think the U.S. government's going to go
great,
after them?
The known addresses. They're perfect. You know where to send the subpoenas to.
Have you guys been following TMX Zcash conspiracy theories?
He's out. He's got it off of Twitter. He got kicked off of Twitter.
T-Mac did?
You got banned.
Rest in peace, my brother T-Mac. I'm going to miss you, bro.
Twitter's going a little bit crazy, man.
Yeah.
A little bit crazy with the
bear market. We're all going a little bit crazy with the bear market.
No, I mean, I don't mean that. I mean, the actual company Twitter is banning people. They're banning way too many people. They're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Jack, especially his very forward thinking with Square Cash. I love the team over there. They're awesome, awesome people. They're a sponsor. Oh, nice. I didn't know they were a sponsor.
Cash, sponsor the pod. We love you. My favorite place to buy Bitcoin. We love you. Jack, we will be critical, though. Not Cash, too fond of Twitter right now.
Cash me outside. How about that? So, you know, I think Jack has tried to be, he's pretty libertarian. I'm a little disturbed, though. I agree with the censoring of certain people on Twitter for various reasons. Like, this is a very slippery slope, and right. I don't know what happens from here.
I think the main problem they got themselves into is that they like somehow figured out a way to make themselves like the arbitrator of truth and like liable for what's on your feed. And what it really should be is just there's no algorithm. It's just straight chronological, and like users have self-moderation, and like they're not liable for anything that comes up on that feed. They're just a vessel that it transfers through. But the second you start sticking yourself in the middle of what content gets shown and what content doesn't, then people expect you to start removing shit, and you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
That's a great point. Let the users curate themselves.
Yeah. And ultimately, we're just going to get censorship resistant.
Talk about consolidating a
platforms.
Narrative around something. Like, that's how the Twitter narrative should be consolidated. Like, hey, as a company, we've created, like, Twitter created the best communication tool humanity's ever had up to this point in history. Like, they are shooting themselves in the foot, like you said, and they should revert to, hey, we're just going to provide the best communication tool humanity's ever seen. You guys go crazy. We're not going to step in. We're going to step back.
Yeah, you don't see someone like freaking out at AT&T because an alt-right person sent a text. You
exactly.
Know?
Exactly.
This is ridiculous.
That's hard for people to realize. People don't. Dan and I talked about this in our long-form podcast. People don't think critically anymore.
Yeah, do you, Dan? You want to say goodbye to the podcast people?
Well, thanks for having me on here, guys. Glad to be in New York. If y'all are ever in San Francisco, we'll do a fun time out there.
We'll definitely hit you up.
And we'll do steak dinner.
I hope my restaurant recommendations bode well for you tonight. I think they will. They always do it for me. So getting back to the topic at hand, last night I was at the BitDevs meetups here in New York and saw Will O'Byrne, who's a freelance developer, recently did the Chaincode Lightning Labs residency. And while he was at the residency, he hacked on this web extension called Joule, which basically allows you to hook your Lightning node up to the extension and go around the web and buy content, interact with microtransactions, stuff like that. And it was the first time since the release of the iPhone 1 that I had like a holy shit moment with this is magical. Like I imagined... like 10 years from now, like the web, like no ads and literally being run by like microtransactions via the Lightning Network. It was a holy shit moment for me. Have you dug into it yet?
Well, first off, the O'Byrne brothers are fucking dope and Marty had them on the pod.
Very strong bloodline.
Make sure you go back and check it. It's like one
very
of the early,
bloodline.
It's one of the early episodes. So go
it's two part.
Yeah, go check it out. They got fucking wrecked, and it's just a really, really good episode.
I'm wrecked right now, by the way. It's my second podcast of the day.
Yeah, so like Marty told me he's editing out a bunch of stuff that just happened, so I'm not sure what I've said and what I haven't said, which really bothers me.
I'm a censor.
So when are you releasing Dan's pod?
Next week.
Okay. So he's two pods deep right now and he's a little bit drunk. And I got him this nice whiskey, Talisker whiskey that one of our tweeterers recommended, and it's fucking delicious.
Very, very good whiskey.
Okay.
Very smoky.
So to continue, Joule is, not to diminish it, is basically MetaMask for Bitcoin, except you run your own Lightning node. Which yes. is a big difference when it comes down to, you know, don't trust, verify, the whole ethos.
Exactly. Very, very important distinction.
So you have a very simple user experience. It's very easy to make Lightning payment. Well, it will be. They're not accepted. It's an extension for your browser, and it's not accepted yet on the different stores. But once it's accepted on the different stores, you know, you just You just install the extension from the store like you install any other extension. You point it to your Lightning node, and you're good to go. All of a sudden, you can pay Lightning payments at any website, microtransactions at your fingertips. So, well, Bat is fucked, right? Like, the Brave has no... Like,
Will actually brought up Bat in his demo last night.
Yeah, they're absolutely fucked. The basic attention token is actually Satoshi's. Is really what the true basic attention token is.
And this is something we've been preaching for years, is, hey, everything you guys are trying to build will eventually be able to be built at some layer of Bitcoin stack in the future. And it's finally come to fruition. And last night in particular, there was a lot of ex-consensus people at this Bitcoin meetup in particular.
Consensus with a Y, the yes. Ethereum the juggernaut.
Yeah. And they were like enthralled by the Lightning demos, and it seems like Lightning is becoming just as easy to develop upon as Ethereum might be.
If not easier.
Yeah. And
that's huge.
Even going beyond micro payments and stuff like that, Will has this vision of WebLN, which is also a play on Ethereum's Web3 stack, which allows you to like carry your reputation around with you, but your reputation is tied to your node. So if your node is known for opening channels and providing liquidity for the network, you'll have a good reputation. And as you go around the internet to other websites with your Jewel extension, websites will be able to see, hey, Marty's a very good contributing member.
Seems a little bit like a privacy issue.
He has discovered. He has privacy. He's coming from a privacy first principle stance where you only reveal your history to a website when asked, when prompted, and when you're ready to reveal that info.
That's important.
Yes, it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, look, every single token that exists for web-based microtransactions just got fucked.
Right. Right?
So like if it's an article paywall token that, you know, oh, you're just, you want to watch, you want to read a single article and pay for just, you know, the 1 cent for that article, boom, fucked. You know, if it's Bat and you're paying a YouTube publisher a microtransaction to look at a video, fucked. You know, so that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
This is a game changer. I mean, I'm working on a Lightning app that our major issue, well, we had two major issues for launching. Well, we had three major issues for launching. One is procrastination, which is has nothing to do with any of this. Two is there were just really no usable friendly wallets, which Jewel is a very pretty wallet, which is like important. I think it's a very user-friendly implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing is the bear market, which is, you know, no one wants to launch anything in a bear market.
That's true. But
but the number two was the most important thing. You know, I'm just being frank with you guys, but the number two is the most important thing. Like, you don't have wallets where people can use, like, we were like, well, what, we're just going to recommend the Eclair mobile wallet, like the only user-friendly Lightning wallet. So this is fucking huge news. This is like really, really big news.
Yeah, and they're using LND as a backend, so it's a pretty well-tested implementation of Lightning. And Will, as I said, he has a security-first mindset and also UX-first mindset, which is imperative. And I shit you not. Like,
you can't have two first mindsets, can you?
You can have first principles, for two first principles being...
Okay,
two of those principles being security
and
UX.
They share the first category.
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize.
Thank you.
Don't give me that one. That's why I'm here. I'm here to give you shit. I'm here to give
you shit. But I shit you not. Like, I had a holy shit moment, like, watching Will demo this, like, buying articles on Yalls. Like, yes, it was Yalls.org, which is a very Bitcoin-centric website.
Well, no, Yalls was created in the first place.
It's a troll.
To fuck with yours.
It's a troll. Yalls is a troll.
Ryan Charles's Bcash.
Billion-dollar company.
Oh, billion-dollar company. Yeah, bullshit.
But you could easily see that process being extrapolated onto incumbent publishers like the Wall Street Journal, New York Times.
Great blog.
Yeah. It all these publishers have to do is make it so their website can communicate with the extension, which is a line,
super easy.
A line or two of code.
They don't even have to talk to Brendan Eich.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, exactly.
They can just fucking do it.
Yeah. It's insane. And I honestly believe it will, like, pff, I think I saw like I think I had like the inside view of a product that will change the way we interact with the internet in the next decade or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, you freaks, you just enjoy the pod now, because in the future, like, you're going to have to pay us Satoshi microtransactions to listen to this shit. You know, so like you're a free rider right now, but eventually you're going to have to, you know, use your Jewel extension to pay us.
Yeah, so shout out to Will. He built that by himself, by the way, from scratch.
I'm impressed, man. It looks
one man shop.
It's super pretty, super user friendly.
And it's completely open source. He's open sourced everything. So if you want to take a look at it, go to LightningJoule, JOULE.com. You'll be able to easily find the GitHub page. And if you guys want to make a, first of all, download it, use it, have any critiques, PRs, request, start interacting with the GitHub page. It's completely open source.
I think this is the most excited I've been on over a specific,
I'm telling you,
app,
dude,
or like specific, you know, not core development or anything, you know, not a protocol level change or anything. Just a,
this is massive,
an actual usable consumer product.
Yeah,
I think this is the most excited I've ever been. And you couple this with the hardware nodes we've been talking about, with, you know, the Casa node and the Noddle.it. And then the coin mine, which I don't really like, but you get a shitty GPU miner in there too. And then all a user has to do is you buy a hardware node, you buy a little dedicated computer that's running your Lightning node and your Bitcoin node, and you get Jewel, you point it at your node, and all of a sudden you can make all these different micropayments and stuff on the web directly in your browser frictionlessly, and your trust is ridiculously minimized. Like, obviously you don't read code and shit, you know, you're a normal user, there's lots of trust in there, but that trust is reduced to the greatest degree possible, because, you know, it's open source, plenty of other people are looking at it, and that's fucking dope. That yeah. is fucking that's what the vision is, you know, the vision's coming together,
right? And it's crazy that one man built this to this point.
The power of one man. Never
to help people realize.
Never second guess yourself, man. Like, there's so many people.
Space.
Okay, so then we have. Let's move on to the next topic.
So yeah, Lightning Jewel. If you can help Will out, he's been a one man show up to this point. Like, it's crazy that he's gotten to this point and that it's open source. Like, this is an incredible base layer from which to blow on and like you grow on. Excuse me. And like you said, my mind was blown last night. It's like the most excited I've been of anything outside like a protocol level development in a while. So definitely check that out. Next topic, Ohio taxes. Ohio has a fifth pillar politician in their ranks.
Yeah, I mean, the tax news is like no fucking big deal, but the treasurer loves Bitcoin. And he says he doesn't own Bitcoin now, but it sounds like he'll own it in the future, or he secretly owns it. But either way, he's like major Bitcoin proponent. And one of the things I liked was he didn't use the word crypto. He literally said, you know, Bitcoin creates freedom for people and reduces government size and puts a check on government, which is like exactly what you want to hear.
Yeah.
From a government official.
And shout out to Bitcoin Sign Guy who called this out. He had the prescience to call out the fifth pillar politicians that will exist within our system. This is just an example of one of them. And staying on the same vein as Ohio, they have decided to accept tax revenue via crypto.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's no big deal.
No big deal. But I want to bring it up. They're using BitPay. Ohio, you should be using BTC Pay server.
I'm not going to use BTC Pay. You should use Coinbase Merchant Services, I guess. Like, I fucking hate Coinbase, but they're better than BitPay. Fuck BitPay.
BitPay is about to go obsolete. BitPay is even capitulated with BIP 70, where they're finally depreciating.
They can go fuck themselves. That doesn't work with any wallets except for their wallet. So
no, it doesn't even work with their wallet anymore.
Right, so that's why they deprecated it. Yeah. That's good.
Next
use copay either.
No, don't. Oh, we should talk about that.
We're pressed for time, right? Copay had a vulnerability because they had a dependency further up the line of their project, so that they had a JavaScript dependency that they relied on that was automatically merged into their project, and that's just a bad trust model. So like, well, you shouldn't have that trust model.
Well, this package in particular was specific to their implementation.
No, it wasn't. All the packages, this package is used in like a ton of different projects.
But I thought,
but
I thought
vulnerability was specific to Copay. So the package that was compromised is used in a ton of other shit, but the actual vulnerability was targeted specifically at BitPay.
Okay. Right? And it was weird because it was targeted at wallets like with a greater than 100 Bitcoin.
Yeah, a hacker with morals. I guess. Only attacked their edge. It's Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Not Peter Pan.
Robin Hood. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so there's a Robin Hood hacker out there. Do not use BitPay and do
just
not
a bad trust Copay. Model.
Yeah, terrible trust model.
Next, if you want multi-sig, use Electrum.
Actually, yeah, good advice from BitDevs last night. If you're doing multi-sig, use multiple wallets. Create a multi-sig.
Multi-sig of multiple wallets?
Yeah, like an Electrum and a Trezor or something like that.
Yeah, but Electrum lets you use Trezor to make the multi-sig.
Yeah.
So you can use like a Trezor, a Ledger, and...
But the point of using multiple different wallets... softwares to make a multi-sig is in case like there's ever like a critical vulnerability in like a Ledger or Trezor or anything like that.
Right. You got the but backup. Electrum allows you to use those multiple methods.
Yes.
So like Electrum's is the home base of that all.
Yeah. Next up, we got hash rate talk. We've got a couple. We're about to have two downward difficulty adjustments in a row. First one was 7%, 7.5%. Next one projected to be in the next week and a half. Is projected to be around 11.5-12%. Hash rate is falling with the price. Matt, does price follow hash rate, or does hash rate follow price?
Well, it's nuanced, right? But hash follows fucking price, guys. Like, they're running a business. They have to pay rent. They have to pay labor. You know, what the price is matters to them. That's how much money they're making. The smart ones finally nowadays have legitimate ways to short, so they can hedge themselves, which is beautiful for miners. Obviously, not a lot did. What's interesting is the electricity in China has doubled because...
A drought, right?
Right, which is normal with the seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's winter there where it's a dry season, so there's not as much rainfall, which
hydropower. All their power comes from excess hydropower. You don't have excess hydropower, prices go up, right? So their prices doubled, Bitcoin goes down. All the miners were overextending themselves. The same reason all the buyers were overextending themselves. The mining is the ultimate long-term bet because you have major, major capex and you're spending a ton of money to set all this shit up and you get paid over time, right? So these guys are going basically levered longs. Mm-hmm. And if they don't hedge themselves, like, of course the hash is going to go down the price goes down.
Yeah. And one thing
it evens out. The difficulty adjustment makes sure that this shit, that's the beauty of
exactly that's what I was just going to get into. Do we believe in Amon's theory of the downward spiral of hash rate?
No, the death spiral isn't going to fucking happen. And the truth of the matter is I can keep fucking saying that unless, and then the death spiral happens and you can, you know, be like, you were wrong, and then it's fucking over. But I think it's been proven wrong multiple times in the past. The difficulty adjustment is fucking beautiful. It changes. If you have like some kind of worst case scenario where there's like a large drop off and blocks are like ridiculously slow, then we could technically fork to a different difficulty. We could technically fork to a different POW if we needed to. Those are worst case scenarios, but it's not zero, you know?
We talk about hodlers of last resort a lot, but a lot of people don't talk about miners of last resort, and they really shine in these downward difficulty adjustments because there's people that are holding hardware that at a certain point was not profitable, but now that the difficulty is adjusting downward, is now profitable, and they will turn those machines on to eke as much income as they can.
Stacking stats.
Exactly. So there is a hodler of last resort, there's a miner of last resort. There's somebody who's got that hardware that is not return their full investment yet, that is waiting for a downward difficulty adjustment to turn it on and reap that benefit.
I agree.
Right. We're going to see this play out.
This happens every time. It's going to look, hash rate fucking blew up this year. It was amazing. It kept
12,
going up
12 to like 15x. Yeah.
So they had a lot of inefficient miners that there's like a way more ASICs that got developed that are way better. And they, you know, they held probably a little bit longer than they expected because they expected the price to go back up, you know, just like a normal investor would, you know. They would have had irrational hopium. And it finally hit the point where they're like, holy shit, like every time I run that miner, we're losing 40 cents a day. So we're going to fucking throw it out. And right. That's what happened.
Yeah.
You know? But there's lots of FUD triggers and stuff, but whatever. It's mostly, there's nuance to it, but mostly hash follows price. If there's an incentive to mine, if there's an incentive to create more efficient chips, you're going to do it. If there's an incentive to throw that shit out, you're going to fucking do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we hear this same shit every single fucking time.
Yeah, well.
And we're going to hear it into infinity. Like, in 2025, when the hash rate falls, they're going to be like, death spiral. Okay. Wake me up when it happens.
Right? No, but it is, there's a lot of FUD out there. And a lot of people are pointing at Bitcoin Cash, BCH ABC, and BCH SV. Both are technically more profitable to mine than Bitcoin.
No. SV isn't technically.
Or
but one, ABC is.
We checked last night. They both were. At BitDevs.
Their difficulty adjustment changes way more frequently. So that makes sense to me that I thought it wasn't profitable on SV. The key things that you also have to think about is that miners don't get paid for 100 blocks. After 100 blocks, they can actually move.
That's when
their
the Coinbase
coins.
Reward is.
Yeah, so if you're like on an unstable chain like SV and ABC for that matter, like you could get to a point where, you know, it's 97 blocks later and you get a fucking reorg, you know, and then you're fucked. Like yeah. You just lost a lot of money. And the liquidity issue as well, where just because it says it's more profitable doesn't mean you can actually dump your coins on market and get market price. You know, if they're very thinly traded markets. You know, one of the reasons SV is so high,
especially
is because Binance isn't fucking allowing deposits and withdrawals, so the price is automatically pumping. There's no arbitrage there.
And especially if the mining pools in those particular minority forks are the market makers as well.
And like super centralized.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's fucking garbage. And I really, like, me and like some other people I've spoken to, like, we're ready to support.
Attacking
I've been ready
these chains?
Since the beginning. Give us a pool where the explicit goal is to fuck them. Let's just any SHA-256 fork that's small, we fuck. Otherwise, we'll just mine Bitcoin. Give me that option, and they'll be dead. Let's do it. They should have died way long ago. They need to be killed. You know, people used to have balls with this shit. It's time. Bitmain pretend they were protecting it for a while. They're weak. They can't protect it. It's time to kill it. Let's kill it.
Matt, you're so insensitive.
It's time to do it.
These people have a right to view that. Their chain is the Bitcoin.
They can continue. Change the POW.
I agree with that.
Let's force them into changing the POW, guys.
Yeah, but I would, as we have expounded upon here, I would not freak out about the much vaulted Bitcoin mining death spiral. It's probably
not that big of a deal.
Again,
most of those miners are being thrown out. They're inefficient. Even if you wanted to use them for 51% attack, it'd be super expensive. It'd be hard to sustain that kind of attack. We always have the nuclear option of changing the POW. We can always do some, you know, it's just no one wants to kill their golden goose. No one's going to spend that kind of money to do it. 51% attack today. You should always be worried about a 51, but right now it's like way less risky than it's been for like the last 2, 3, 4 years. We're doing really, really good.
Yeah.
In terms of that. I mean, Bitmain's weak, man. If Bitmain can't stop fucking Craig Wright, then Bitmain's fucked right now. Like, they are, all this rumors, all this bullshit, whatever, you know, I've been tweeting about it and shit with grains of salt, but what proves that Bitmain is weak right now is that they can't fucking kill SV. Because, like, what they should do is keep reorging SV. And if they don't have the ability to get 5%, 6% hash to keep fucking SV over and over again, then they don't have any kind of capability to do anything to Bitcoin. Like, there's not even a fucking chance. They both have negligible hash rates.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of people who try to attribute the price fall over the weekend.
Including Jihan. Jihan had that WeChat, whatever, where he was like, if I do this,
that
we're
turned out to
keep
be fake.
Falling.
That turned out to be a fake.
Oh, that was fake?
That was fake. But
so not including Jihan.
There was a lot of pundits out there who tried to attribute the price fall to the Bitcoin Cash fork in particular. Whereas our friend Mirab Mamadov would say it's a snowflake on the avalanche.
I said it straight up on Twitter too. I was like, this has nothing to do with Bcash. It was we had very little volatility. We were in a bear market that breaks down. That's what happens.
Yeah, I bet the bigger driver, and I'm not trying to force a narrative either, but if I were being completely analytical and looking at it rationally, I would say the bigger driver is probably the fact that the crypto funds of last year that had 1 year lockups probably. Those lockups probably ended and people were able to liquidate their shitty investments.
And some of the funds actually had lockups where if you were an employee, you get out when you leave the company.
Yeah.
So a lot of people left their companies and they went back to their traditional finance jobs and they get out of their lockups.
See you, losers.
Like bear markets, price goes down. Bull markets, price goes up.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. We got the SEC head, Hester Pierce, on what Bitcoin did.
She's not the head. She's one of the five board members.
One of the five board members. Close, as close to the head as you can get.
So Peter McCormick, who I actually met last week, he was in town. Awesome dude. Absolutely awesome dude.
Bummed I wasn't able to join you guys.
He's What Bitcoin Did is his podcast. He interviewed Hester Pierce, who was the dissenting opinion on the, I think, the most recent ETF denial. That's just fucking cool. She reached out to him. She was like, we're ready to do a Bitcoin interview. He flew in from England to do it. You know, she took a picture with, like, come on, guys. Like, in 2014, like, we didn't have, like, one of the SEC board members, like, saying that regulators in the U.S. shouldn't interfere with this.
Right.
And then furthermore, at Consensus yesterday, they had Clayton come in, who is actually the chairman. I think he's the
chairman. Yes, from the SEC.
He's the head. And he made slightly negative comments, but slightly negative comments made at a Bitcoin conference is bullish. That is, that's awesome. Like, that's ridiculous. The SEC chairman came to a Bitcoin conference and didn't say that it's terrorist money, you know. Like, this is that's a big deal.
He basically said
it's a positive thing.
At the end of the day, he said he just didn't want the trading to be manipulated, and he wanted custody to be locked down, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's like a questionable talking point because, like, how far do you draw the line?
Yeah.
Because with Bitcoin, you'll never be fully sure that there's not some whale manipulating whatever. And like, what is manipulation?
Yeah.
I would say in a free market, there is no manipulation. That's just whales being whales.
Yeah.
So there is like some questionable whatever there, but I think overall all of his statements and Consensus, we have some friends who went there, right? Well, you didn't go, I didn't go, but we had some friends that went there, and they were saying that overall his speech seemed, you know, very besides the point that he was actually speaking at a Bitcoin conference to begin with, it seemed very positive. Right.
Yeah.
Not negative.
Yeah.
It seemed very not negative.
I think there's
a
positive EV coming from this appearance from Clayton.
Yeah, absolutely. Why would he even come? You know, you don't come to an like Al Qaeda conference.
I'm becoming more and more convinced that the regulator is going to have no power in this space, though, especially after that OPAC talk earlier.
No, see, they have no power over Bitcoin.
Yes.
BitLicense proved that.
They have power over people that use Bitcoin.
They have power over Americans.
Yes.
And we're Americans. So America gets fucked if they handle this poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin doesn't get fucked. That's an important distinction here.
It is very important.
And as an American, it's important to me because I don't want America to get fucked.
Neither do I.
But as a Bitcoiner, it's inconsequential to me because Bitcoin doesn't fucking give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about the OPEC earlier, right? If those Iranians were using Vertcoin or some like ridiculous altcoin, like, it'd be way easier for them to be like, if those fucking coins move, you're going to Gitmo. Like, you're going to you're going to either jail if you're an American citizen, or you're going to fucking Gitmo if you're not an American citizen. Like, you're fucked. Or, like, you know, if you're a Middle Eastern country, like, you might get hit by a fucking drone, you know, like, and then that those transactions better not move. But with Bitcoin, it's like, who do you pressure for that? You know, a miner's going to mine it, and it's, you can mine anonymously because we have small blocks. So how do you enforce that? How do you stop that from happening?
We'll find out. And I think this is going to be a big test. This is maybe like a diamond in the rough story that a lot of people aren't paying attention to, but may have a big impact on the certainty that people have that Bitcoin is censorship resistant and resistant to state attacks. I would say this is a state attack in a way.
Which one?
OPAC.
Yeah. I mean, guys, install Wasabi Wallet, wasabiwallet.io, and please start mixing your coins. Let's get all these things. Let's make plausible deniability for everyone.
Yes, it's important. Imperative. All right, last topic here. We're going to talk about VanEck, OTC index. I have not read any of these last three stories.
I love it. You just trust, don't verify.
I'm trusting. What's going on? Are we getting an ETF in the next couple of weeks?
No. VanEck put in OTC price index so we can see the prices more transparent in OTC. It's like it's a setup.
What desk are they tracking?
Multiple desks.
Cumberland, Genesis.
I'm not positive, but it's definitely multiple desks. And the idea is that they want more transparency in OTC markets. Circle Trade, Genesis Trading, and Cumberland are the three that they're starting with. And they're going to add more. And this is key because the VanEck ETF is going to be based on OTC prices. So presumably it'll be based on this OTC price index, which is what we saw when the Winklevoss tried to do an ETF. They created the WinkDex. I don't know if you remember when they launched
the WinkDex. I do not remember the WinkDex.
It was a very pretty website, so I'll give them that. So this is them setting up that price transparency before they do their ETF, which is scheduled for February-ish. Then also they announced that in January, they're aiming for January-ish for NASDAQ and them to partner with a futures product that is cash settled. Bakkt is also aiming for a January-ish launch, but that is not cash settled. That's Bitcoin settled. You can actually get Bitcoin at the end of your futures trade. This doesn't happen. In 2014, we weren't talking about, is NASDAQ going to list futures in 2 months? Like, we're in a completely different, this is a completely different scenario. Now, price-wise, you guys are way too fucking easy. You guys were all calling for $1,000 fucking a week ago. We're probably in a bull trap. We'll probably go back down. I'll probably lose my fucking bet.
You're definitely losing your bet.
Yeah. See, money's a little stake. Bit of confidence. So let's just fuck them. Let's just go up and then go back down. Let's capitulate after my steak.
I would be so pissed if I buy you a steak dinner and we have not hit our low. And
then we go down. That'd be fucking beautiful. It'd be the best case. But this, you know, it's probably like a short squeeze bull trap situation. You guys are way too exuberant for this to be the bottom. But I don't play those games. I just hodl like a little motherfucker.
Yeah, you motherfucker, you. Tether.
This is a big one.
Relaunches.
You said the last one was. Oh yeah, I see. We actually did cover all this shit. That's pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing
short
good.
Short amount of time, we did pretty good. Tether used to let you go to tether.to to switch your Tether into real dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got rid of that because regulators were going to fuck them. And now they reopened it. And I think that's a big deal. I think.
What does Lawmaster think of this? What's our boy Lawmaster saying?
He's not our boy. I didn't call you out on that last time you said that. But you always say our boy. Until he buys Bitcoin, he's not my boy. That's how I feel about that.
Very hypercritical.
This is huge because I think the big deal, the reason they got rid of Tether.2 is because let's imagine you're breaking U.S. laws, right? Do you want $1,000,003 bank transfers going through? No. Like, that's ridiculous. It's super easy to shut it down, right? So you do large batch, like OTC, deals where it's like 3 million, 4 million at a time. And then you could do like creative banking techniques where you like give them different bank accounts over and over again, all this different stuff. It's a way different expectation than giving consumers a direct redemption. So it protected them. They were like playing, you know, like the same games that the sports books played when they were dealing with all the regulatory uncertainty. So this is a big deal. This means that they're probably like the DOJ investigation that we heard about is like probably on the mend. And I mean, Tether has been like a main source of FUD. Like I've been talking, we've been both way talking about this like way
over
way
a year.
Oh, wait, my 2 years almost now.
Yeah.
I mean, Bitfinex sold at 800. So we've been talking about it since then.
Yeah.
So I think this is like a really good sign. It's a very positive sign that, that Tether is, and I never thought they were not solvent. I just, you know, they're breaking U.S. laws, so they're always
sketchy.
But they obviously feel more comfortable, probably because all the other stablecoins have launched and they all allow redemption through their respective sites. So they feel like they have some like political cover because those are based in the United States and they're not.
Yeah.
Is my guess.
So it
but it's good news. It's definitely, it's super positive news.
It seems like there's a lot of good news in this bear market right now.
This is Mr. Hoddle, one of my good friends, one of our good friends online, Mr. Hoddle.
Love you, Mr. Hoddle.
He's the most bullish bear market we've ever been in.
Right?
You know? As long as you're not into the shit coins. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with those people. You know, you never know.
We don't. As we described earlier, it seems like Lightning is killing a lot of altcoin.
Well, it kills a lot of token projects. Like, so when it comes down to like fair launch POW altcoins, it's a whole different breed, in my opinion. But a lot of these bullshit token projects that were like, where you're going to use this token to pay for Wall Street Journal articles, you're going to use this token to pay for your YouTube views and shit. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's clearly, it was completely centralized to begin with, doesn't have any censorship-resistant properties, gives you no equity in the actual underlying company. It's a completely worthless piece of shit. Yeah, I mean, with Bitcoin, the value prop is a very obvious value prop. It's a fixed supply asset, and the more people that buy it, the higher the price should go, right?
Yeah.
And this is crazy. Like, having all these things, like, Wall Street is fucking people is what they're doing. I mean, I don't think they're suppressing the price. I think they're just taking advantage of the normal cyclical movements to, like, build up a massive position right now. I think all the smart money is building up, like, a massive fucking position right now.
I would not be surprised. And I would not be surprised one bit. There's too much good news going on for the, I mean, I'm not calling for a price pump imminently or anything, but
Marty is calling for over 6,600 by January 1st.
Under 6,600, but under 6,625.
Guys, what we're aiming for is 6,626 by January 1st, and then you can just dump, you can capitulate after that. Like, let's just hit that point. Let's push it over the edge.
All right.
Get my free steak.
You freaks can try. We'll see if it happens. That's all I have to say for this week. It's been a fun week. It's been a long day. It's been a very long day. Very productive day. Second podcast.
I have one more thing to state.
All right. State it.
All the longtime bears have come out over this last 2 weeks to kick us while we're down. And I think it's important that all of you guys go out and you archive all their tweets. Archive them all on go to archive.is and just archive all their tweets. Put them all out there. I've had a bunch of them block me because I've been doing it across the board. And it's important that we document all this shit because they're going to delete it. They always delete it and then they say the same shit at the top of the next bull. So we need to archive it all and they go fuck themselves. Okay, that's my PSA. Thank you.
That was Uncle Maddie's advice for the week, his PSA of the week. I want to thank our guest Dan Held, who joined us for the first half.
That was pretty cool, right? That was nice.
Yeah.
That was a surprise. You didn't tell me I was going to meet him when I came up.
Big surprise guy here. I hope Dan is on a
big surprise guy.
hope Dan's on a lovely date right now. Appreciate you freaks for tuning in. Sorry if I was a little inebriated tonight.
He was very inebriated tonight.
Peace and love.
Cheers, folks.